And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio. It's 4 minutes past nine on this beautiful Thursday morning. It's the 8th of May and the weather across the Northwest of Ireland is glorious. The majority of you are listening here, of course, in this region, but many thousands of you listening online and from around the world. And we hope it's as pleasant as where you are, but not as nice as beautiful Donegal. Okay, another 3 hours of keeping you informed of all the big news stories and issues that are important to you in this region, but not just in this region. Of course, national and international matters affect us. We'll keep you updated on all of that. We'll have the usual mix of news, views and opinions. And your comments as well to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And if you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. That's also for you podcast listeners and repeat listeners. We love your comments as well. If you want to watch the show, hop onto YouTube. You can watch at home on your smart TV or your Fire Stick if that suits you. And we're also on Facebook and on the X platform. Let's look at Thursday's papers. The lead in the Tyrconnell Tribune, Vincent Roddy, president of the INHFA Farmers Group, says the new EU restoration law will cover at least 1.6 million hectares of land nationally, and this includes rewetting the restoration of existing habitats and re-establishment of lost habitats. The INHFA says the figure for land impacted, quoted as by political sources, is a distortion of the facts because they are only referencing a rewetting program for approximately 100,000 hectares. Mr. Roddy says that an average 20% of the country's 6.9 million hectares of land will be subject to redesignation. A very detailed article on the front of and inside that paper today. The Donegal News: a Letterkenny woman who lost her father and brother to cancer within just 3 months of each other has told of how her family's harrowing experience is leading her to call for better local services. Mary Devlinor from Glencar opened up to the Donegal News about her devastating loss after meeting with Minister for Health Jennifer Carroll McNeill when she visited Letterkenny last week in 2020 during the COVID-19 pandemic outbreak. Miss Devlinor suffered unimaginable grief when both her father and brother, both named Willie Devlin, lost their lives to cancer. We had a chat with Mary as well when we were covering that health minister's visit. But there's a detailed article and coverage of her story on the front of and inside the Derry People Donegal News today. The Derry News on a Thursday: ill-advised remarks about suspended priest caused anger and concern. The ill-advised remarks made by a priest towards the conclusion of an Easter vigil mass in the Derry diocese have caused considerable anger and concern. The Derry News has been contacted by a reader who said he was extremely upset at the language used by Father Paddy Baker, Fawn Parish, regarding Father Eddie Gallagher. Mr. Gallagher, who is charged with attempted sexual communication with a child, has been suspended from ministry. What were the ill-advised, though? Mr. Gallagher, by the way, who's charged with attempted sexual communication with a child, has been suspended from ministry by the Bishop of Derry, Most Reverend Dr. Donald McKeown. His arrest and charge followed an incident involving paedophile hunters outside a Derry hotel on Thursday, April 17th. At Easter's Vigil Mass in St. Muir's Parish Church, Fawn, in Inishowen on Saturday, this is April 19th, Father Baker referred to Father Gallagher's arrest by the PSNI after Mass in the Cathedral, St. Eugene's, a day when we celebrate the gift of priesthood. I thought it was so ironic that he was arrested on that day, so he has been suspended from duty and awaiting a court decision. We pray for him. He needs a lot of prayer. We pray for his sorrowful mother, who had to witness the awful attack at a hotel in Derry, added Father Baker. We pray for his victims, we pray for his family, and we pray that God will heal his soul and be with him at this time of need. And some people thought those remarks were ill-advised. You heard it referenced on the news. Two nuclear powers, albeit some distance away from us, are at each other's throats, and it's been rumbling on for ages. But nuclear war with India could break out at any time, Pakistan's defence minister has said. His stark warning came amid reports that 31 people, including 4 children, had been killed by Indian aircraft launched missile strikes on 9 suspected terrorist facilities. A further 57 were injured, Pakistan officials said. The attack was in response to a massacre of civilians at a beauty spot in the Indian section of the disputed Kashmir region last month. India had blamed Pakistan for sponsoring the militants behind the slaughter, and it was a particularly disgusting act. Last night, Pakistan's defence minister, Khawaja Asif, issued a stark warning telling Pakistani TV channel Geo News, if they impose an all-out war on the region and if such dangers arise in which there is a standoff, then at any time a nuclear war can break out. They're in close proximity to each other, relatively speaking. They don't get on. And there are different types of nuclear weapons, of course. We'd all be familiar with the ones that cause absolute devastation and the big mushroom clouds, but there are tactical newts that could kill tens of thousands at any one time. But there have we have been on the precipice between India and Pakistan before 10, 12, 13 years ago. Similar incursions between the two happened, and there was also a concern about nuclear war. But I mean, it's mutual annihilation, and you would hope they would find a way to step back from that. On a much lower scale, but everything's sort of relative and it's quite important to some, the whole Scots rule. We're going to talk about this a little later on, I think. The rebellion against the Camogie Association's insistence that its players wear Scots rather than shorts is gathering pace. Reigning All-Ireland champions Cork and Waterford confirmed yesterday they would defy the regulation by wearing shorts for Saturday's Munster final. We will be togged out wearing shorts, the team said in a statement released by the Gaelic Players Association. That's our choice. A refusal to wear Scots would, according to the rules, result in Cork forfeiting the game. But Aisling Thompson, one of their senior players, told RTE earlier that if it means abandoning the game and handing over the Munster title to Waterford, that's what we will do. The association has been asked for a response to the statement released by the GPA. And I don't know what, I mean, obviously this is about whether people are more comfortable in shorts or skorts, but there also is a situation that in 2025 that a sporting organisation should dictate what women wear. You wouldn't see it in the men's game. Let's put it, you know, let's, it wouldn't happen in this day and age. It still happens in the women's game, in the women's game. And I wonder if it's as much that, in other words, you must wear this item of clothing as opposed to, you know, whether all of the ladies feel uncomfortable in skorts or not. As I say, in the wider scale of things, not a massive issue, but certainly one that people have an opinion on. Interested in yours, 086 60 25,000. For the longest time, I've been covering the annual reports on elder abuse in Ireland, and it always seems to be in an upward trend. And it does worry me that, you know, and I know older people particularly can be very, very fearful, and often the fear is maybe of people calling to the front door, or maybe passing, or whatever it might be. But you would hate to, that really genuinely upsets me to think that perhaps the greatest threat to older people is those around them, you know, be it financial abuse, physical abuse, or general mistreating. And none of us would like to be heading into our latter years where we should be content and happy with any fear or distress. It's horrible to think. But unfortunately, there's been an alarming rise in reports of elder abuse, with complaints doubling since the start of COVID-19 to more than 7,500 a year. The government's being urged to widen laws on coercive control to include adults looking after their parents or older relatives, after the figures show that psychological abuse is the most common form of abuse against those aged over 65. There are also calls to introduce laws which have been before the Oireachtas since 2017, but have so far not been enacted on the safeguarding of adults. HSE figures show there were 7,503 safeguarding notifications relating to elder abuse reported in 2023, the latest year for which figures are available. So that's 7,503 that maybe they themselves made a complaint, or presumably maybe those that have a care interest in them observed something and were able to make this case. It's really horrible to think for a moment that 7,500 older people felt so unsafe. Maybe that's something you've a view on. I'd be very interested in speaking more about that. 086 60 25,000, and we'll try and get the authors of that report on. Right. Again, a completely different topic, but it's in all the papers, and it's whether or not Israel should compete in the Eurovision Song Contest. I think we might be speaking to Charlie McGettigan a little later on. Of course, he is one of the most famous Irish names associated with the Eurovision, and he's of the view that Israel should not be included. And I think really, how do I put it? There's going to be different views as it relates to the initial response Israel took to the events of October 7th a couple of years ago. You know, in the Eurovision straight after that, there might be a space for, you know, backwards and forwards saying we did this because this was done to us and so on and so forth. Now we're at a point whereby Israel has effectively said they're taking Gaza over. They're herding the civilians of Gaza into what will effectively be a concentration camp in South Gaza, and they're going to stay in Gaza indefinitely. Now, I'm not saying that this is the point. I'm just saying realistically, right, up until this point, maybe you could argue back and forth one way or another. People are very rigid in their views on this and might disagree with that, but I hope you understand what I'm saying. But the head of RTE has reached out to the European Broadcasting Union to ask for a discussion on Israel's inclusion in the Eurovision Song Contest. The move comes as the Irish government joined six countries yesterday calling on Israel to show restraint in Gaza. In a joint statement, the foreign ministers of Ireland, Iceland, Luxembourg, Norway, Slovenia and Spain expressed grave concern about a further military escalation in the region. They insisted it would only exacerbate an already catastrophic situation for the civilian Palestinian population and threaten the lives of the hostages still in captivity. But then on to what RTE have to say. Emma O'Kelly, chair of the NUJ Dublin Broadcasting Branch, last night said, "We collectively believe that there is a moral obligation on RTE and on the EBU to act to suspend Israel from the Eurovision." They sent a letter to RTE's Director General, Kevin Backhurst, calling on the broadcaster to formally oppose the country's inclusion. But what do you think about that? Now, going back a number of years ago, and I can't actually timeline it, but there were calls for Israel to be banned from the Eurovision, and they went on and won the blooming thing. This wasn't since in the last two or three years, but it was going back a number of years ago. Does it? And you know, you might say that, seriously, with everything that's happening in Gaza at the matter, what difference does the Eurovision make? But it's these things that would embarrass Benjamin Netanyahu far more than a letter from foreign ministers, believe it or not, that they could be excluded from a global television event. So it has a significance in that regard. It's not insignificant by any stretch of the imagination. The Farmers Journal, not surprisingly, leading with a farming story, and finished cattle numbers for the second half of the year will be down 7% to 8%, Bulbia projects. The forecast will bolster hopes that red hot beef prices will continue to rise for the rest of the year. The fall off in supplies is due to a combination of reduced store cattle numbers and an increase in the kill for the first 4 months of the year. Bulbia forecast a 5% reduction in prime cattle numbers for 2025 as a whole, but predicts that supplies will tighten further during the back end. So keep an eye on that and make sure you get your best price for your cattle, probably at the mart, because there is some criticism that factories aren't stepping up to the plate and paying farmers what they deserve. We talk about road safety, and we talk about what can lead to devastating death and loss, and often it's speed, distracted driving, and a harrowing case of loss, but also too of irresponsibility that led to that loss. A man who drove at nearly twice the speed limit and crashed into a tree, resulting in the deaths of two teenaged friends on their way to their Debs ball, ignored pleas to slow down. Anthony McGinn, 61, is to be sentenced on May 14th as he pleaded guilty to dangerous driving, causing the deaths of best friends Kia McCann, 17, and Dilava Mohammed, 16, on July 31st, 2023. He also admitted to dangerous driving, causing serious bodily harm to Dilava's sister, Avin Mohammed, on the same occasion. McGinn was placed in a position of trust to drive the teens to the Debs ball in Monaghan town that evening, Monaghan Court heard. However, after travelling at excessive speeds of 151 kilometres per hour in an 80 kilometre zone on a wet road. His white BMW skidded and crashed into a tree on a section of the N54 at Legnakelly near Clonus, killing Kia and Lava and seriously injuring Lava's sister, Avin. It's unbelievable, isn't it? He's pleaded guilty to that. And last but not least, we were watching the news last night, waiting for the smoke to come up. I found myself watching it. The one thing I did notice is that an awful lot of waffle whilst they're waiting for a bit of smoke. It turned out to be black, and thankfully they've fiddled with the chemicals, so there is no ambiguity whether it's black or white. It was black. The wait for the new Pope continues today after the conclave of cardinals failed to choose Francis's successor last night. There were gasps of disappointment as black smoke was finally seen rising above the Sistine Chapel at 8 p.m., 9 p.m. our time. 8 p.m. our time, 9 p.m. local time, indicating no choice had been made after the first vote. Thousands had excitedly squeezed into St. Peter's Square. The smoke appeared about 2 hours later than the restless crowd had expected. So whatever was going on, that they didn't come up with a decision. But they debated it for a long time. All right, that's a run through some of the stories in the papers today. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Now, Helen Hall, the Chief Executive of the Policing and Community Safety Authority, joins me on the programme now. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Thanks so much for joining us. Right, so the new Policing and Community Safety Authority is an independent civilian agency responsible for the oversight of the Garda Síochána. So what did it replace and what is its role more specifically?
Yeah, it didn't come from nothing, Greg. It's the successor organisation to the Policing Authority and the Garda Síochána Inspectorate. And I think I was here with Highland Radio a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. when we were doing a similar exercise on consulting on the policing priorities. So its main function is to oversee, and on behalf of the public and your listeners, to oversee what the Garda Síochána does and the service that it provides. The addition is that we'd also have a role now in relation to community safety. And look, you know, that is really about trying to ensure that people not only are safe, but actually feel safe day to day in their local communities.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not in any way questioning the work that the authority does, but you know, we've just gone through the annual congress from the GRA, for an example, the AGSI, who themselves, particularly as it relates to regions like Donegal, have talked about the issues that they have with how policing in Dun is done and its resources. And I'm just wondering, if they can't achieve change talking about it on an annual basis, what role could the authority have to enact any change?
Well, I think we have a significant role, and we have played a significant role even over the past 9.5 years as the Policing Authority. I think the addition now, having inspection powers as well, to be able to go into Garda stations to inspect. But it's not just about finding out, looking at where things can be improved from within the Garda Síochána. It's also about what can enhance and support Gardaí. They do a really, really difficult job. They're there with us when we're at our most vulnerable, either as a suspect of crime, but also as a victim. They're there at, you know, road traffic accidents. They really, really do a tough job. I think my optimism for the Policing and Community Safety Authority is that it is about that wider community safety piece. And one of the real ambitions of that is that you'll have multi-agency working. So, for example, in the middle of the night, often what the Gardaí are left dealing with is not policing matters. It's sometimes mental health. You know, it's sometimes, child protection. They're not the agency that should be dealing with that. They're often left doing it because they're the only ones available. So I think the real ambition of the new organisation and the new act is that all public agencies, there's a mandate on working together for the sake of community safety. I think, you know, why I'm talking to you today is really around, you know, encouraging your listeners and the public to have a say in what the priorities should be for the guards, you know, and We launched our public consultation last week, and what we really like is, you know, for people, you know, there aren't unlimited resources. It's like with anything, even in our own household budgets, we might be able to want to spend everything, but we have to decide, you know, what's the priority.
But I think
and that's
not,
what this exercise is.
I think for us, and it's this is not a submission, and I suppose you're independent in this completely, but it's not about the limits on the resources. For us, it's the distribution of the resources.
Exactly. And that's what this consultation is also about, because, you know, but I think Greg, there is an issue, and I think everyone has acknowledged that there is an issue with resources at the minute in the Garda Síochána. I mean, if you look back in 2016, the government made a decision to support the guards in having 15,000 members, 4,000 Garda staff members, 2,000 reserves. That's 21,000 humans across the organisation. And currently they've about 17.5. So there is an issue of lack of resources, but I agree with you. I think then it is about, well, we all have to work with what we have. And what do we prioritise? And that's, it's the Policing and Community Safety Authority's job to establish those priorities for the guards. And I suppose we want to hear from people as to what they think, if they were sitting in the Garda Commissioner's shoes, what would they what would they prioritise in terms of the distribution of those resources? So we have a simulator tool, and your listeners have an opportunity to do it up until the 8th of June. I did it myself last week. It's not easy. You're given 70 points across four areas, and there's 24 different police. And when I went to page one, I thought, oh, definitely that needs 5 points, not zero. It needs five. So you're looking at human trafficking or drugs importation. But then when I got to page three, I went, wait a second now, I've kind of run out of money, and domestic abuse is really important, and hate crime, and victim services, and mental health. So you end up having to shift and move and make those really hard decisions that Gardaí have to make on a daily basis as to whether to go to incident A or incident B. You know, it is about the distribution.
In relation to that process, though, how does it capture regional differences? Like, say, for instance, you talk of Garda numbers. If we hear of 100, even though we've less resources here now than we ever had, if you hear of 100 new recruits, you know, 97 might go to Dublin, and we might get one here in the Northwest, and that person might end up being in Sligo. Does the survey have the scope to sort of capture the regional differences?
I think the whole idea of the way the guards have reorganised themselves is precisely trying to do that. Now, we met with the GRA there 2 weeks ago, and I wasn't at AGSI, but I certainly heard the reports of what went on. And there are concerns about what's being called the operating model, and that's the reorganisation of the way the Garda Síochána works. You know, it does. It is going to need a bit more time. I mean, what that reorganization has done is it's moved from the guards being organized across 124 areas and districts to 21 divisions. And to be honest, that is about making sure that once you've a rural area, rural division, that you have the equivalent of crime specialization, of protected services, of those things, of cyber. So it is now, but when you're battling against then 17,500 people versus what you should have of 21,000, that's difficult to resource as well.
I get you, and it's not to debate the new debate the new working model. Again, I just want to be keen to know if it captures this. For example, in Donegal, a massive sprawling county, you could have someone arrested in one part of Donegal, and for them to be transported to a holding cell, it's a 50-minute drive. New policing model, like in Dublin, for an example, whereby, or a city, if you know what I mean, whereby we are having the same model for an urban situation in a very, very rural situation. And again, just as I encourage people to take part in this, does it capture those nuances for us here facing specific issues?
I think it does, because you have opportunities. I mean, when we had colleagues of mine were in Donegal yesterday talking to Gardaí, and we're here in Carrick and Shannon today talking to communities. We'll be out and about in the Northwest. Precisely that, when we talk to communities, I mean, a lot of what a lot of what people want is they want visibility. They need to be able to, and when they call for service, they need it quickly. Mm. It's not like sometimes the debate is about having a Garda station here or here, but the important thing is that service is provided quickly to the most vulnerable. So there is an opportunity in this. Like if you look, like as I said, when I came to down the pages, I went, well, actually, no, on page four is all about community safety and ensuring that. So I actually re-spent my points when I got to that. So there is that opportunity, I think, Greg, to do that. I also, you know, think that, you know, the important piece is firstly, people's voices are heard. But secondly, I think the operating model is a work in progress. And so if I take the example of Donegal, when I was talking to you a couple of years ago, you know, Donegal division was Sligo Leitrim Donegal, if you recall. And now they're learning and they're trying this out. The organization, I mean, is trying this out. And then they said, well, look, that does not make sense. And that has now been changed. And now at least Donegal division is at least one county. And part of that, it's also to take pressure off some of the, like a superintendent in district was responsible for everything. Now you have a superintendent who's concentrating solely on crime. You have a superintendent who's concentrating solely on the safety of the community in that division. So it's not that they're pulling superintendents from it. It's just that they're being allowed to focus on a particular area.
Mm. Okay.
So I'm optimistic and hopeful, but it is something we have to watch, and that's the job of the policing authority to look at these areas. And I would like to come back here again and see how is it working out. This is not a once and done. Our job is actually to oversee what the Garda Síochána are doing. That's our job every day. Mm-hmm. And I think, look, policing is so important. You know, the Gardaí have a lot of power, and I suppose the public need reassurance that somebody's watching that on their behalf. So we do want to hear from your listeners about their concerns.
Yeah, and one of those concerns, for an example, and as I say, an example, the armed response unit is based in Ballyshannon, which is closer to you in Carrick on Shannon than it is me in Letterkenny. You know what I mean? How does that make sense? You know, but anyway, we shall. That's just part of what it's like living in.
I live in a rural area myself, Greg. And one of the things is I would say, well, when do we ever see a guard? And we have to go to the main towns. I live in a village. So it is a concern all over the country. And I think that's something that the Policing and Community Safety Authority will be encouraging the Garda Síochána to address.
Yeah. Okay. It's interesting. And also, too, what I think would be interesting, Helen, is the views of the numbers of Gardaí that are retiring. Do you specifically meet with them? As you know, those that are probably have another 10, 15 years of service worth in them, but they are leaving. Well, so they're not Gardaí, and they are the public, don't get me wrong. But would it be not interesting to specifically poll early retirees, not early retirees, but you understand where I'm coming from.
Well, I do, and in fact, the consultation actually includes, and we're hoping to get a flavour of that, so somebody can actually say whether they're a member of Garda personnel or not. And we are very interested, and in fact, we were encouraging even people we've met in Garda stations, you know, do the survey themselves. We do want to hear from everybody, whether they're from within the service, whether they're retirees, or whether they're members of the general public. So I think, look, it's on our website, pcsaireland.ie. Like, essentially, people get these 70 points and they have to make the decision as to what they believe is important. And that really will hopefully feed into then our establishment of the policing priorities.
One final question. It's really for clarity. Sorry, Helen. When this report is concluded, will it say this is the situation in the Garda, Donegal Garda Division, this is the situation in Mayo, this is the situation in Galway or Dublin, or does it take policing will it be the attitude towards the Garda and the service they provide on a national basis?
I think what this is testing the temperature as to what the country believe the priorities should be. Mm-hmm. And like with any survey, look, this is for anybody aged over 16. It is anonymous.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be identifying people. So it will depend on how much responses we get. Mm-hmm. So look, if we get sufficient responses, certainly we will be able to do analysis by area. And we certainly are interested in differences between people in rural areas. We're already seeing that. I mean, this has been on a week. It's running until the 8th of June. We see differences in how people respond from cities versus rural areas, and that's something that certainly can be looked at.
Okay, and just remind us where people can access...
They can go to our website. It's pcsaireland.ie, and you just click on the link and you're into the survey. It only takes about 5 minutes to do, so I really would encourage you, Greg. I'll be asking you next time I meet you,
shall.
Did you do the survey? Thanks a million.
Okay, take care, Helen. Helen Hall there, Chief Executive of the Policing and Community Safety Authority. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. This came in a couple of times, and it's about your disability badge in the Republic and its use in the North. And this is very important, obviously, because you could be in Lifford and going to Strabane, but you could be in Greencastle going to Derry. What is the situation? Because there seems to be a difference of opinion. And I have the absolute answer for you, of course. And the texter yesterday said, I have a disability badge for my car in the Republic of Ireland. Someone said to me recently that if I am shopping in Derry or Strabane, the badge does not cover me and I have to buy a parking ticket. Can anyone clarify if this is true? And here's the response from Derry City and Strabane District Council. The holder of a disability badge issued in the Republic of Ireland or the European Union have the same access to bays as UK blue badge holders. Payment for the use of parking bays still required in off-street car parks where a tariff applies. Hope that clarifies. So, in terms of public areas, your disability badge is the exact same as the UK blue badge, but just be careful. Payment for use of the parking bay is still required in off-street car parks where a tariff applies. So in other words, if it's a non-charged area, anyway, I'll not clarify. I don't want to muddy the waters any further. That's that. So there you go. Rest assured that your badge covers you in the same way the blue parking badge covers you. So no harm maybe just having a quick read of the ins and outs of that. Right, I try and not make the same mistake twice. And we did have a review of speed limits and we're becoming accustomed to them now. And it's coming in a couple of stages and we're heading into the next stage now. So we've got early access to Brian Cannon to make sure we know exactly what we're talking about. And Brian is Director of Service, Roads and Transport Directorate with Donegal County Council. Thanks for your time, Brian.
Thanks, Greg. Good morning.
It's good to have you on the show. Right now, so Donegal County Council has begun a process as it relates to the next stage, I suppose, of speed limit reviews. So what's on the table this time?
Okay, Greg. And I suppose what I'm here to highlight is the fact that this next phase, which starts from next Monday, the 12th of May, we're running a non-statutory public consultation on proposals for implementing new speed limits within urban areas, including a proposed 30 kilometre per hour speed limit within the urban core of some of our towns and villages in the county. The consultation will run for 2 weeks up until the 26th of May. And as part of that, as part of proposals, we've looked at 103 settlements within the county that currently have either a 50 kilometre or a 60 kilometre hour speed limit. And 58 of these locations have speed limit changes proposed. And 43 of those have urban cores of 30 kilometres per hour proposed. All of our information will be available on our consultation portal, consult.donegal.ie. But we'll also be hosting 7 in-person events right around the county. And I can give you the details of those if you wish.
We'll do that at the end, if that's all right, Brian. Can you pick a town for us as an example? I suppose one that might have a double change to the speed limit, perhaps, maybe. Do you know what I mean? On its approach and then through the town itself. Is that easy to do?
Well, there's 103, as I say, and there's 58 locations that have changes. Mm. But if you want to consider, say, for instance, which will be the biggest change for the public will be the 30-kilometre-hour speed limit. And remember, this is non-statutory. This isn't part of any legal formal process. This is us taking the Road Traffic Act from that was passed that proposed these changes and showing what our interpretation of that is to the public before we engage even in a bylaw process so that it helps inform ourselves whenever we move forward for consultation with the elected, further consultation with the elected members and other stakeholders such as the Gardaí, etc. So if we take, for instance, the 30-kilometre urban core And if we take Letterkenny, for instance, now, obviously, I'm not being exactly precise because you can't name every street. But if you think the main street in Letterkenny from the station roundabout right down to the bottom of Lower Main Street, that would be the main, and then all of the streets that come off that main street that go up past the cathedral and also down towards the Pierce Road would be proposed to have an urban core of 30 kilometres per hour.
Yeah.
Now that would also say, for instance, also be applied to some what we call our smaller towns. So if we take Kilmacrenan, for instance, around the Kilmacrenan crossroads, we've got the N56, the main road to Preachla that goes north-south. Part of that would be proposed to be 30, but then also the local roads that join that either side would be proposed to have a 30 core for a 30 kilometre speed limit for a certain distance either side of the junction as well. So really the centre of Kilmacrenan would also have a 30 kilometre speed limit.
Yeah, okay. And in terms of the towns and villages that you've selected, 58 of 103, as part of this consultation, you know, people go, wow, there's no proposal for our area and traffic's flying through it. Can they also, can the public make submissions to sort of suggest, well, we prefer if you also included this area?
The public can, of course, make submissions, Greg, and we'll be compiling a report from the consultation that will then be brought to our elected members so that we share all of the submissions that are made. And we would have had similar, feedback as a result of other processes that that we ran. And again, they're compiled, they're considered, and they're brought to the attention of our members, who are ultimate decision-making body when it comes to bylaws, which will take place later this year. We're really encouraging the public to get involved in this consultation. Our consult portal is quite useful in that you can do it in your own time. But the fact that we're also running in person means that you'll be able to talk to some of our staff within the various drop-in events and get an idea of what's proposed and what the changes might be, how they might impact on yourself or on your community.
In selecting the settlement areas that you have, what would be the criteria for an example, if you know what I mean? So is it safety? Is it a school? Is it junctions? Is it, you know, the width of the road? Like, what is the process there?
Well, these 103 settlements that have been selected already have an urban speed limit. So either a 50-kilometre speed limit
the 58,
or a 60-kilometre speed limit. And 103 locations are quite a lot of locations around the county. So that was the basis for assessing them. And then based on the way that the guidelines are developing in relation to speed limits, then we've assessed those 103, which has resulted in changes to 58.
Are a few people asking, are housing estates included in this part of the process?
Housing estates that have been taken in charge by the council were actually included in the last first one.
Yep. Okay.
They're currently at 30 kilometres per hour, and many of those housing estates have a sign as you enter the housing estate, and then ones that may be closer to the urban core that may change to 30 may not, and they'll be picked up in due course over this phase. But currently the bylaw was passed that had any taken in charge housing estate to be 30 kilometres per hour.
Right, so there will be a map available where people can sort of drill down into their areas of interest, of course. Is that live now, or does that go live on Monday the 26th? Monday the 12th.
Monday the 12th.
Okay.
Yeah, that goes live on Monday the 12th.
Right, so...
Greg, and look, I do know that 30 kilometre hour is going to be a change for people, but there are 30 kilometre per hour zones implemented in many areas right across Europe. And also, I suppose it has been... But what's the purpose of it? The purpose of it is to improve safety. And it's been proven through research that lower speeds in urban areas obviously significantly reduces the fatality risk.
It's one of those things, like, say, for instance, in Letterkenny, people were saying, oh, you'd be lucky if you get up to 30, but on occasions you can. And it's and I think no one feels you should be going through Letterkenny at more than 30, for an example. But then you gave the other example of Kilmacrenan. If you live in Kilmacrenan, or you have to cross the N56, or you were involved in some of the relatively high-speed collisions, you know, you might think, right, we really need this reduction. But if it's your commute from from Creaslaw to Letterkenny, you might go, that's crazy, reducing that to 30. So that's the way it is. If you live in an area, you might have one particular point of view, but if you commute through it, and you're a pain in the backside of those that live there, you might have another. And that's why we have this consultation period, and eventually the dust will settle, and hopefully we all come up with the right solutions. So the online consultation begins on Monday. We'll be doing a separate news story on that to share the link as well. But you can check the Donegal County Council website on Monday, and I'm sure it'll be quite visible there. You also were talking of face to face situations. What's that about, and where?
So we're holding 7 in-person events right across the county. So starting next week, starting next Monday, the 12th of May, in Killybegs in the Nine Moor Centre from 4 to 7. Then in Donegal Town on the 13th in the Public Service Centre from 4 to 7. And Clochanleah in the Inid Service in Pubble from 4 to 6 on the 14th of May. The 15th of May in Cairndonagh in the Public Service Centre from 4 to 7. In Ballyshannon on the 15th of May in the Abbey Centre from 4 to 7. In Stranorlar on the 19th of May, so Monday week, in the base from 3 to 6. And then on the 21st of May in Letterkenny Public Service Centre from 4 to 7.
Now, this is a stage. This is the non-statutory stage. After all of this consultation, a further document will be released, a draft special speed limit bylaws. And at that point, there's a statutory consultation period for the public to have effectively a second say on what they've potentially helped to form through this non-statutory process.
Absolutely. As part of the bylaw process, we're obliged by law to have the statutory consultation. But this non-statutory one really is a nearly engagement between ourselves and the public to highlight the issue, maybe to work through some of the concerns, and maybe to tweak some of the proposals before we enter the statutory phase. And you're right, people will have concerns. Obviously, people will support it from a public road safety perspective, but people will also have concerns from a commuting perspective and what impact that might have. I suppose we are mindful of arterial routes around towns, and people will see from the maps that many of those aren't impacted by the urban cores. But there are arterial routes that go through towns. So if we take, for instance, Kilmacrenan, I've mentioned Dunkineely in South Donegal, where the N56 goes through the village. There are urban cores of 30 kilometres proposed in those locations. But we have to think about what's important here and time. If you're travelling for 500 metres at 30 kilometres per hour, as opposed to 50 kilometres per hour, that adds 24 seconds to your journey.
Yeah, and so, you know, we've seen the images of the school in Dunkineely, lorries having to stand on their brakes to avoid school children. They'd be approaching that with a 30-kilometre zone, which presumably would affect their driving and help prevent things like that there. So we can't have our cake. We can't eat our cake and still have it. We do have to look at this in the round as well. So say, for instance, not drilling into specifics, just to get an idea, say, for instance, from the roundabout in Letterkenny where Corrie's is at to the Polestar roundabout, would that be classed as sort of an urban area? I know that's a very specific question, but you talked of the likes of the main street, but then you have sort of other roads that the speed limit might be a little bit higher. I don't want to put you on the spot with that specific question.
That wouldn't be considered urban core. Yeah. That's the T. Blaney Road.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't be considered urban core.
That's just to give people an idea of what we're talking about, too. I think this actually, I turned out not giving a bad example of that. Okay, that's interesting. Right, so check out the council's website from Monday. We'll share the link on Monday as well. There's an an online consultation process, and we'll also link the in-person situation as well for those who don't want to engage online. Anything else that's important to add, or if we covered everything?
No, that's good, Greg. But look, we really just say thanks for your help in promoting it. We really do want the public to engage on our portal or in person, and then to make their submissions either in the portal, in person, or they can also email speedlimitreview@donegalcoco.ie.
All right. Listen, Brian, thanks very much for your time. That is Brian Cannon, who's the Director of Service, Roads and Transportation Directorate with Donegal County Council. It is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. I live in Kilmacrenan and I've never seen a speed van in or near the village. The speed in the village and the crossroads is ridiculous. We have seen numerous collisions and still no action has been taken. Well, as part of these proposals, your speed limit in Kilmacrenan will be reduced to 30. Then, of course, it comes down to enforcement. There's always a change of driving behaviour to an extent, but of course, I'm sure then you would look to seek enforcement of that. What about the proposed speed limits for housing estates in urban areas? Well, if housing estates are under the council's control, they're already 30, and Brian indicated there that those close to urban areas would probably be caught in this as well. A caller says the public consultation's a PR stunt with the property tax. They did a public consultation and they put it up anyway. If they wanted to cut down speed, there's a simple solution, speed ramps, but there's no revenue in this for people to be caught out. Just one thing to be clear. The people you elected had a decision on the property tax. There's very few areas where Donegal County Councillors have a direct influence on, and it was they that decided to retain the increase in the property tax, if you know what I mean. So, you know, they're the people you elected. Not all of them did, of course. There was abstentions and people that disagreed and all that kind of stuff. But my point being is that it was up to the council, and it was the councillors that got together in the chamber. They decided whether to retain the 15% increase, drop it 15% to the lowest level, or increase it a further 15%. And it was they that decided to retain the 15%. So that's the bottom line in relation to that one. And a few people have pointed out that. But I mean, you know, you can have all the public consultation in the world, but if the councillors decide to do it, then they've decided to do it. What a profoundly unserious country. Police crime, as it has always been understood, not non-crime hate incidents and other thought crimes. No end of Gardaí were available to enforce lockdowns or maintain order at peaceful protests. They can't cry lack of resources. It's funny, you know, the same people that, and I'm not attributing this to the listener, the same people that sort of believe there should be, you know, non-crime hate instances shouldn't be investigated or thought crimes should not be investigated are the same people that often have an issue with other people saying stuff publicly and don't see the irony in that, which I find quite astonishing. All right, news on the way.